Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves, presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp for your chance to win a $200 tattered cover gift certificate. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
Good evening and welcome to the Tattered Cover. As you can see, there's a lot going on tonight. We're really very pleased to welcome Mario Acevedo Beck with his latest book, Jailbait Zombie. I just love this. At his website, he's got a great website, but in reading his bio and stuff like that, I was a former child therapist. And I love this one line where he says his aunt, when he was age four, there's this cute little picture of this cute little boy. At age four, his aunt asked him what he wanted for Christmas, and he said a machine gun, which I love. I kept picturing the parents telling me that in the room. Anyway, he told her that, and then it was until after he graduated from New Mexico University and joined the Army Infantry, then he got to really play with one and also got to fly an attack helicopter. So he's had quite a career. Later, he played the corporate role as an engineer, which was followed by a master's in information systems, at which point that job, I guess, went overseas. So he then resorted to his talents as an artist and was artist in residence at the Arte Americas in Fresno. He was a combat artist in Desert Storm, and he taught art to prisoners. Which university? Which prison?
Avenel State Prison.
Okay. In California. And then he also organizes art fundraisers for pet rescues. So all this time he's been scribbling stories. And then he came upon and joined the Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Group. And all those stories led to us getting to know Felix Gomez. So tonight we're going to find out about how Felix does with the undead. Or at least a little bit. You'll have to write the book to find out exactly.
Right.
Okay. So let's welcome him.
Thank you very much, Pat. So I'd like to thank you all for coming out tonight. I'd like to thank the Tattered Cover and Charles Stillwagon, who's the events manager here, for setting this up. Hopefully all you know that the Tattered Cover is one of the real independent the jewels of the independent stores in the country, and authors of much greater publishing stature than me, literary stature than me, always make it a point of coming to one of the Tattered Cover stores. And independent bookstores are under a lot of pressure. They were under pressure before the recession, and now as a result of the recession even more. So they need your support, so please support them. I also need to thank my publisher, HarperCollins, and my editor, Diana Gill, with EOS, the imprint of HarperCollins, and her assistant and publicist, Greg Kuby, and my agent, Scott Hoffman, who made all this possible. So what I was going to do tonight was talk a little bit about, what's happened in writing with me and what's going on with that. And then I'm going to show a little video here, what I call a book trailer. And then after that, then I'll talk a little bit about Jailbait Zombie and how I came about to write that book. So my first question is, why are you all here? Okay? Really, why are you here? And hopefully you're here to stimulate the economy by buying lots of my books, okay? But This is my fourth book, and I say that to some people, and they go, "Your fourth book? Still? Why don't you get a real job?" And I'm trying my best not to get a real job, okay? So please help me out. But I have to acknowledge the fact that you're here to celebrate with me the launch of a new book, and I'm not going to deny that there's something special about the artistic creative process. You have poetry readings, right? You have art openings if you're a visual artist. People show up for those things. You have music and dance recitals, and those are special. And that's kind of different than your regular work. And I remember one time when I had a different job and I had a computer program that I'd been working on for weeks, and I was really excited about it. So I took the laptop home and I showed my kids what this thing was, and basically it was just a fancy spreadsheet right? But it was a lot of work, and you click on it, and it expand, and all these numbers would come up in different colors. And I showed it to my kids, and my kids go, "Dad, you have a really boring job." So I have to acknowledge the fact that I'm very privileged for being up here, and I'm very grateful for your attendance. But there's a lot that you learn in getting published. And I have this you meet a lot of other writers, a lot of authors. And I met this one guy named Reed Farrell Coleman, and he said that getting published put me in touch with my own obscurity. So there's a lot of you out here tonight, and that comes out. And for me, what I've learned is that being a professional writer has been an exercise in humility. Right. One time when X-Rated Bloodsuckers came out, this rarely happens when you're at my level, that the publisher decided, "We're going to send you on a book tour." I'm like, "Okay, great." And they paid my fare, and they paid me in these really nice hotels. I felt guilty about it. And I go into this one hotel in San Diego, and I tell them, who I am. And they're like, "Oh, okay." And then they go, "Where are you going to stay?" And then they go, "What about the $300? And I'm like, "What $300? Oh, there's an expense for you. Owe you overnight for $300. In other words, I had $300 to spend there. And if I didn't spend it, it's like the government mentality. You use it or lose it. So that's an awful lot. And I was by myself. I felt really bad about that. But then the next night I went up to, Universal Studios City. That's right outside of Hollywood there. And I went in there and, I by myself, like a $90 meal, and it was great. But in the LA Weekly, which is their version of Westword, I was looking in there, and sure enough, they had my signing there at this mystery store in Westwood. And they had a little thing that said, "Most recommended, go there." And I'm like, "Oh, wow, this is awesome." I show up there, one person shows up. So I told the guy, "We have an hour here, and you don't have to stay the whole hour." And he didn't, okay? So he's... but he's a nice guy. As you're talking to this guy, he starts, turning and looking at his watch. And you're like, no, this is really interesting. Let me get to this part. And then another time, last year, we had the World Fantasy Con, the Dimension 3 here in Denver. And we had a signing there, and I got to sign with this guy named Ben Bova. And my background is, even though it's supernatural mystery and the fantasy conventions, I really tend to read mystery stories, and that's where I've always seen my strength is mystery stories. So there's a lot of these guys I don't know, and I didn't know Ben Bova. And the guy, he's probably in his late 60s, and he's a really nice guy. And it turns out, he's been writing, and he's a bestseller, New York Times bestseller author there. And I'm sitting next to this guy, this old guy, and he had a line of people, like our table to the door was 30 feet. Right. So he had a line of people out the door and around the corner. Not only was there a line of people, but they had baskets with his so heavy they had them on carts. And he looks at me and he goes, "Well, you're kind of new to the publishing business, aren't you?" And I go, "Yeah." So I had a few people come up along. So I would get next to him and I would open up his book so it'd make it easier for him to sign. And then another time, even though it wasn't really related to writing, it just happened to, one of these situations that let me know my place in the universe is that. And that same tour, I ended up going to San Francisco, and I was at the Borderland Books in San Francisco. And I think it's on Mission. And if you're going north, then you get on Highway 101, and it's really tricky. And I've done that several times, and I only got it right one time. And then the last time I was there, and I said, "I'm going to get it right this time. I'm going to get it right." And sure enough, I missed it. And it's this weird thing because, it's a big highway and you look and you're trying to get the ramp, but it's really not obvious. If you live there, it's obvious. They have a little bitty sign. But if you're not from there, it's not obvious. So I missed it. So I'm going along and I'm lost. And I got to get back on the highway and I don't have a lot of time because I got to make the airplane, the airline. And there's this cop car. So I pull up behind this cop car and I start beeping the horn. Right? And the cop car pulls over, and you guys know San Francisco cops are really notorious for not being nice guys, and I knew that, right? So they pull off the side of the road, and I stop, and then they all get out, and they have their tactical uniforms on, and they all get out, and they look at me, and they go, What are you doing? And I'm like, I need to get on the highway. And the guy goes, "Don't beep the horn." And I'm like, "Well, how do I get your attention?" "You just wave." I didn't know I didn't have to beep the horn. It was in our memo, okay? And I'm like, okay, next time I'll make sure to get on the distribution. So that was a Dilbert moment there. So, you know, and in writing, you often hear about writer's anxiety, and there's a little bit more than, to me, than writer's anxiety. There's actually writer's terror. And the anxiety of writing a book, a novel, this is a lot of work. And it really consumes you. And I like to think about writing a novel is like being in a marathon, except you're sprinting the whole time, okay? And you're constantly revising, and then you get close to the deadline. And for me, even though that deadline is far away and you get that first draft done, you keep revising and revising and revising. You stay up at night, want to get it right. And you think you're going to miss something. And it made me think that there's this quote that goes, a writer never finishes a book. He just gives up, right? That's what happens. He just said, the hell with it, you turn off. And it's the anxiety of the creative process, which is like you, like if somebody writes a hit song, right? They go, oh, we love it. That's great. Now write another song, only different and better, all right? So that's the challenge, is you have to write the next book, and it has to be different, and it has to be better, whatever that is. So you never can get into this, into the mode of thinking that, okay, I got one book, and then you write another book thinking it's going to be easier, and it's not, because it's always this challenge that you have. And then there's the terror part. And for me, the terror part is, you know, like most of you, it has to do with money. Because you just get enough money to feel like you're just getting ahead, and then it's like you're jumping from ledge to ledge, right? And that's what it feels like in this terror. And I wake up, and I used to be married, and one time my ex said, you know, if you would have put this time, instead of writing into making and selling burritos, you'd be a lot farther ahead. So I tend to agree. Now the cool parts. There are some really cool parts about being a working writer and a novelist, particularly in the mystery genre and the fantasy genre. And part of it is here, like tonight, where you guys come and you celebrate this moment. It's the launch of the book. And, you know, there's a lot of people I haven't met before, and I'm really grateful that you're here because, you know, I'm just the circle is like a disease, right? Like an infection is going out there. And I really appreciate that. And the thing is that sometimes you go to a strange city and there's people waiting for you. And they're not there to serve you a subpoena, you know. They're there because they want to buy your book. And that's always great. Now, then there's also a lot of camaraderie because all the writers come to writing in different paths. Probably one of the hardest things you can ever be is like a brain surgeon, right? But you can start in a program to be a brain surgeon. And at the end of that program, 12 years from now or whatever, you'll have a piece of paper that says you are a brain surgeon, right? A certificate. And you can go into a hospital and say, hey, open her up. Open that skull up. I'm going to operate. And I go, fine, go ahead. But there's nothing like that to be a writer. There's nothing that says, the certificate that says, you are now a novelist. You are now a published author. There's nothing like that. You can take all the courses you want. You know, you can be on all the groups, all the workshops, all the conferences. But until it happens, it doesn't happen. And it happens in different paths. And you get with these other authors, other writers, and you get to see that and you recognize that and that challenge. And then there's the camaraderie of recognizing that. And then for me, being a mystery writer, I really like, because mystery writers drink the most of any other writers. And there's the fantasy guys, and they're okay. They're okay. I've never been with the romance authors, so I don't know. Writers, I don't know. But an example, I was invited to go to Muskego, which is a suburb of Milwaukee. And they had this thing called Mayhem and Murder. And it was a lot of fun. And they paid for everything. It was really cool. And we were in this really nice library. And we had panels there. But they only had one panel at a time. So they had probably 30 authors there. So it's snowing and starting to sleet. So what do these guys do is they go across the street. And there's a convenience store across the street. And we go there and they sell beer. So it is sleeting. And we're in the alley behind this convenience store drinking beer, being authors. And that's what I really liked. That's part of the camaraderie that we have there. So now we got the fourth book here, Jailbait Zombie. Right? So why zombies? And I thought, well, part of it was to kind of mix up the stories, you know, to keep it fresh. And, you know, you got the undead world with the vampires and all that, you know. And vampires tend to be solitary creatures, and zombies are this big mob, right? And I thought that would be fun. And my books tend to move around. In my first book, Felix is actually from California, and he comes to Denver, and he stays in Denver. And then he ends up setting up residence in the Oriental Theater there in the Highlands. And in the second book, he goes back to his roots in California, and you learn about him. And the third book, he goes to Hilton Head, South Carolina, to this government conspiracy. And in the fourth book, he goes to the San Luis Valley. And I thought the reason that I went with that was for two reasons, which actually ended up being a very small part of the book, was I had read about gangsters coming into the mafia, coming into Denver. And they really didn't – the presence wasn't that big in Denver. I mean, they did have the Smaldinos. The Smaldones, rather, in Denver, but compared to the power and the influence that they had in the East, they never got it. And somebody says because they had too much competition from the police here in Denver. But some of them moved out south, and they send up they had Trinidad, they were in Trinidad, they were in Pueblo, and they were actually, many of the gangsters would come to the East, and they would go to the hotels, like in the different resorts, and then there's the presence there that they had. And I thought that would be kind of interesting. And the other thing is, in the southern part of the San Luis Valley, you had the Penitentes. And the Penitentes were a lay order of the Franciscans. And they moved from New Mexico with the Hispanic and the Spanish farmers, and they settled into the San Luis Valley in the southern part of Colorado. And they were a lay order because the Catholic Church wasn't that strong. So this lay order, and the penitentes means those who seek penitence, were like this underground secret organization. And it depends who you talk to. Some of them said it wasn't that secret, and then there's other ones that said they were. And back in the 20s and the 30s, there was a lot of movies made about this group, you know, this conspiracy group, you know. A lot of it is very, very bigoted, very racist. But I thought that would be kind of interesting. But as I was writing the book really wasn't about gangsters, and it really wasn't about penitentes. It was about zombies, okay? So I went there. And then it was also about this... something that has developed in my books over time, and is this idea of this psychic world. And I think where that came from, in the weirdest place, was my grandfather had his library. And one time I'd be poking through his library, his books, and there was this book about astral projection. And I got that book, and I read about it, and I thought that was really interesting. And I there was these exercises about people doing things and, you know, projecting themselves. And I tried them as a kid, and they never worked. But I thought it was kind of cool. What if they did work? So in my head, as they're writing the stories, and I didn't really do it deliberately, but it's coming out. It's kind of interesting how that happens now. In every book, this idea of the psychic world keeps coming up, and that there's like an alternative world out there, a complementary world to our physical one. And in this book, that is talked about more. And I wanted to see, okay, who is like this gatekeeper in this world? Because it's something that's mysterious, even to the vampires. They're aware of the psychic world. But as far as actually getting into the psychic world, they don't know how to do it. And someone in this book does. And I thought it would be interesting to see who would be and how this person would do it. It also introduced one of my favorite villains, is Dr. Leopold Hennison, who I think is great. He drinks a lot of Red Bull. And that's why he's so productive. And I really enjoyed that. Are there any questions? Anybody have any questions about anything right now?
Hey, Mario, are you going to read it?
You want me to read?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for reminding me. Okay. I made a mistake. I did have another reading a couple weeks ago, and I made a mistake. Was doing it in the middle of the book, and everybody's like, "Huh? Huh? What? What? What?" So I'm gonna have to start at the very beginning. Anybody here from Aurora? Okay, you're gonna find out why. All right. Now, and when I start this book, I really had to restrain myself or kind of rein it in. All right, a little bit. Okay, so. Felix, drop your pants. The last time I heard those words, they were from a topless stripper. Tonight was different, but the wound on my leg hurt too much for me to protest Mel's words. Mel was the acting head of the local NIDAS, Latin for nest, in this case the community of Denver vampires. Tendrils of anxiety writhed from his orange aura, a bright contrast against the gloom of an autumn night. With a greasy gray mane combed back to his shoulders and scraggly white mutton chops, Mel projected none of the glamour associated with Hollywood vampires. We were on a deserted construction site in Aurora, a suburb east of Denver. Though Aurora is the second largest city in Colorado, it's the Fresno of the Front Range. Square mile after square mile of strip malls and cheap rents that run together to create an asphalt grid of nothing. I lived in Fresno, okay. I rested against the foreman's trailer, unbuckled my trousers, and slid them to my knees. Smoke and blood trickled from the teeth marks on the inside of my left thigh. "Smoke?" Mel asked, astonished. "That damn zombie must have left silver fillings when he bit you." "Silver. No wonder this hurts so much." Mel's right index finger extended into a talon. "Hold still." I gripped the muscle around the wound to distend the punctures. Mel crouched and slid the razor-sharp nail into an opening where the smoke puffed out. A fresh jolt of pain coursed up my spine and out my arms. He flicked his wrist, and a tiny piece of smoking goose spun to the dirt. He spit into his palm and pressed it over the wound. "This is as close to a hand job as you'll get from me." "Doesn't mean we're in love or anything. In fact, please don't call me in the morning." I massaged the injured muscle. "How about a card on Valentine's?" The vampire enzymes in his saliva dulled the pain and accelerated my supernatural healing. By this time tomorrow, all I'd have is another battle scar to add to my collection. I put weight on the leg, and it finally felt like it wouldn't collapse from pain. I fastened my trousers and limped to the edge of the hole excavated for the basement of a large building. Concrete slabs formed two sides of the hole, but the rest was still packed dirt. The zombie shambled within the hole where we chased it. He, obviously once a man, cradled his head under one arm and used his other to grope along the concrete. His mottled, waxy complexion and the clumps of trash stuck to his grimy clothes made it look like he'd been rotting in a shallow grave for a week. I had removed the special contacts that masked my tapetum lucidum, the mirror-like retinas at the back of my eyes. The contacts were part of my cover to hide from humans, but wearing them kept me from using night vision or seeing psychic auras. I didn't know if zombies had night vision. I had no idea of any of their powers other than they were supposed to be hard as hell to destroy. Tonight I had discovered an unimportant fact. They had no auras, which made them a bitch to track in the dark. The zombie clawed the dirt wall, climbed up a foot before stumbling backward. He dropped his head. It plopped against the dirt and rolled like a lopsided melon. The animated corpse sank to its knees and crawled along the ground, one arm stretching in a wide arc. The head worked its mouth and turned onto its face, where it used its nose and chin to inch toward the body. I was more disgusted than fascinated. Yes, zombies are undead, as we vampires are, but comparing them to us was like comparing turds to eagles. The Adonium, the worldwide network of vampires, has one standing order: destroy all zombies. The reason? We must ruthlessly protect the great secret, the existence of the supernatural world, from humans. Their disbelief of the supernatural was what kept us vampires safe. We've seen what humans have done to one another: war, genocide, Walmart. Against their growing technical prowess and corporate savagery, what chance did we, the undead, have? Our best hope for survival was to remain cloaked by superstition and fable. Zombies have no regard for keeping the great secret. They materialize from where, I don't know, and began their rampage for mortal flesh, literally mindless of the consequences. Vampires have been able to disguise zombie attacks as examples of deranged cannibals, Jeffrey Dahmer copycats. But eventually, the zombies will make one attack too obvious to hide, and then humans will be on to all of us supernatural creatures. After that, we can only expect the methodical obliteration of the undead. Therefore, all zombies must be exterminated. I like that, huh? Protecting the great secret is what I do for the Adonium. My day job is private detective. My real job is the pro bono work I do as a vampire enforcer. So, there you go. Now, as far as the gore, now I got a fan email Friday from this woman, and she goes to the effect, she goes, "I really like," she says, what she said? She said, "Your book could have been better, but I really liked it." And I go, okay, I'm kind of confused. Please elaborate. You know, and I was expecting something literary, you know, like your netter prose was too choppy, you know, your dialogue and your transitions were clumsy, things like that. And she goes, no, there wasn't enough blood and gunfire. I wanted more sex. So, okay. So now I know that's what the public wants. Well, thank you very much for coming out here tonight. It's been a real pleasure. I hope you enjoy the books.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we've been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp for your chance to win a $200 Tattered Cover gift certificate and learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.